be here. It's been years since I've been here before, it's wonderful. I'd like to start off with something from 10 short novels. There's bits and pieces of poetry throughout some of these. So this one's called The Heart Foundation. I tried to get away from this, but I couldn't. I tried to get it all out in the open. I tried to explain things, but there was no one there. The best course of action was to wait. I remained supine with only the eyelids flickering. Then, nothing happened again. I could not move, and I waited, but death did not come. Perhaps it came for Kruger. The legs, the arms, the chest, the feet, the head, the throat, the ulterior parts of lessening significance, also without a flicker of life or death on the ship, the dead zone of dreams. There was no one there, nothing moving. I had no explanation for this. I remembered no sequence of events that led me to this paralysis, if that was what it was, for I could feel these limbs. I imagined that I could send messages down the nerves into the muscles and tendons. Nothing, or rather, in retrospection, perhaps it was the will that gave me this illusion of transmission. I could not be sure if there was a body there at all, for I could not see it, as my head would not move. Despite this immobility, I did not feel frustrated. Feeling, for all the plaudits attendant to the state, gives merely the illusion of life and of hope. Others too will try to escape the heart foundation, the illusion of life, and they too will fall into the state of catatonia, having given up on embodiment, on sentience and feeling as fake signals from a star long since dead, falling to earth under the thrall of inevitable gravity, will carry on, will marry and work and procreate and send their children for miseducation as they too were brought up. This is the last laugh of living, or rather of life, if there is such a thing. Perhaps that too is an illusion. Keeping up appearances is an illusion. I could not be sure. I had no sense of mounting horror, no sense of fear, no uncertainty about either my future or my past. A few haiku, or rather, as I had to call them, naiku, because they're not really haikus. Dead man walking. On dead ecstasy streets, angels take me away with my words. Remember, only great love forgotten brings the doom. Someday, the bullets approach, the world's tears. Cannot stop my words. Oren is dead. The child I was is gone in this poem. The critic. The sniper's crosshairs, the spinning bullet, bores me. Civil service. In Dracula's thrall, one never tries in vain. Forever a child of night. Words to found art. It does what it says on the tin. Standing by the shoreline outside the cave, I call out to the ocean. Come back to me, I say to me. The very time I find myself, I find I drift away. I draw these lines, I shore these fragments. Beyond these shores, the soil, bog, rock, shale, these words, there is everything and there is nothing. If we build this, we will live. If we find these words, if we use these found tools, there will be an end to this. This is our question, and the excess of what we've lost is the space beyond these words, the great dark that sways and ebbs, denuding these gathered meanings. I gather the stones into a glass jar found by the ocean. I look at them, identifying types, igneous, metamorphosis, rubbing against each other for a thousand years, they have grown smaller, rounded. They seem to fit together. They seem to make good team members. And outside a cave, the ocean roars. I am living inside a great shell, waiting for the tide to drift back. I feed on the fishes and the birds and the seaweed. I swim in vast oceans of freedom. I fuel this future fossil by which I live and feel, and I wait for the return of all I have lost. I do not know what I have lost. Perhaps I am not myself. I shore up this self by picturing the animals and people on walls. I gather the animals and the birds, and by this blood and stone, I live. It's all I have. Every time I define these creatures, beautiful and dead, the borders crack. Every time I feel these things, the feeling like a ghost howls past me into the dark of a cave. Beyond the shadows, in the night, I see myself, ever lost, ever drifting, and the stars twinkle down in the great sky to remind me of all I long for, all that I do not know. Sunflower. Francois Rabelais paints my blood whiter. William Burroughs, Beatles in an azure sky. Wolfgang Amadeus, the Prince of Purple Rain. Here he rings of Saturn, Mozart of the spheres. Sigmund Jesus. But for the Father, there would be no Son. But for the Son, no Father. I, the Son, the many in one, I have become my Father. I, the Father, killed my Son. My Son then sued for murder. His mother and her lawyers won. I am his murdered killer. So I seek my dead Son down in Hades. I linger in his dreams. I eat his hunger. I drink his rancor, his love. Is death life to me? He is my song to oblivion. He cries my cry of pain. Our great divorce flays our flesh. Our Gethsemane is his faith. Music is perfect. My son still dies for love of me, and I still die for him. He is my freedom from identity. His cross, my resurrection. Da da da. Change the music now. This is a poem for Doris Lessing. Okay. There was something about her eyes I could not stand. There was love and there was hate and tears from sleepless nights and the crops that failed and dreams that died and the rage from the wildfires I lit when they told me to be careful of the stores, but I didn't, and the guilt I felt from being a settler when the natives got pittance for labour. And I recall those men and women cursing and singing under the pitiless sun. I hated that. And in the evening, my parents took chairs and watched the natives leave and say, "Night, boss." And they nodded to the passing laborers. And they were sitting by the porch until the night still buzzing was what accompanied the void. And by the music of the crickets, they smoked. And I remember their yellow fingers and their worn out souls staring through their eyes, looking out at the Cojepes and the vast cannabis lands. And they knew they were a hostage to this, to all the choices they had made. And I remember these things. And I swore I would never be a hostage, never be a slave to those eyes. Eyes that watch you as you sleep. The cold eyes of stars, lost colonies, the lights that are no longer there when you look up at the heavens. I was a slave to no man. Though I loved them all, weak or strong. And I remember the first touch, the first kiss, the terrible fires burning like stars here in this terrible, beautiful, pitiless land. The burning hills at dawn, the fires and the nightfall and the eyes of mother that never left me. I wrote it all, for words were all I had, the stars that guided me to freedom. Okay, this is a a quick snippet from my my favorite racist bigot, Ezra Pound. Ezra Pound's Worst Contemporaries, 1919. Mr. Hecatomb Styrax, the owner of a large estate and of larger muscles, a blue and a climber of mountains, has married at the age of 28, he being at that age a virgin, the term Virgo being made male in medieval Latinity, his ineptitudes having driven his wife from one religious excess to another. She has abandoned the vicar because he was lacking in vehemence. She is now a high priestess of a modern and ethical cult. Even now, Mr. Styrax does not believe in aesthetics. Upon learning that the mother wrote verses, and that the father wrote verses, and the youngest son was at the publisher's office, and the friend of the second daughter was undergoing a novel, the young American pilgrim exclaimed, "This is a darn clever bunch." Nasty man, but it could be funny at times. Okay, this one's called Portrait of an Atheist Monk at Prayer. In these days of silence, I have no love to give. In this land of half-light, I have no prayer to offer you. All these words I speak are but a breath of memory, barren as autumn leaves, blown by a November breeze in the darkness before dawn. Where I wake alone, trembling in the chill before day, with these people of silences, longing with their laughter of tears, whispering things I cannot express, all of us waiting, waiting for the word. Okay, this is a slightly longer poem called, with the very short title of the Revised Standard Edition, Portable Prudence Antipode. Prudence Antipode, a gifted soul, loving father and mother, so many childhood photographs taken, product of an illiberal education, convents and universities of the post-colonial type, having rejected Marx, Derrida, and the volumes of David Bowie, following the demise of Ziggy at the Hammersmith Old One, rest in peace, found herself shipwrecked in the arms of Jesus at the Dominican retreat of Wendy Cope. She, Prudence, gazing slack-jawed and fixated at the immutable transcendental truths mediated by the hypostatically united Trinitarian Godhead, reviewing the works of the Councils of Trent and Thomas Aquinas, temporarily gave up Bohemianism and surrendered ecstatically to church and state. She took to marriage and the having of children, two in the space of 5 years, and a doctorate in the works of Ezra Pound, excoriating his genius and his loathsome racism. With 23,000 words proof-checked and bound by the bookbinder Scaddington and Rotherby, 3 Lennox Road, Dublin 8, found, having cleared her mind of ambitions and the need for cerebral self-affirmation, in the field of the liberal arts and the stock exchange of ideas, and the purchase of moderately priced fashion accessories, the having of luncheons of the health food variety, and the taking of vitamins and lovers, found she couldn't go on like that anymore. Prudence Antipode, gazing upon the strange vistas of her past, luxuriating in her self-defining angst, her unhappiness at such bourgeois oppression, the narrow confines of technocratic multinational employment funding her comfortable life, Pilates, and lesbian flirtations of the aforementioned caring husband, at the age of 33 and 3 days, kissed her offspring goodbye and took to writing of verses, and lingering among the 5 o'clock shadows, the thickets of thinkers and poets that gather when governments fail, lantern-jawed left-wing pollsters and government informants, and the disaffected children of bankers and politicians. Prudence Antipode, dreaming of William Seward Burroughs and John Maynard Keynes, and name-dropping William Carlos Williams, taking lovers and absinthe and cocaine and dreaming of literary immortality. And thus was the empire of the mind maintained, reading endlessly, and yet ending her days in the memory of friends who recalled her in verse. Prudence Antipode, whose children wrote also, mostly with poisoned pen. A few dreary novels published by the consortium of Harcourt and O'Connell, having taken polls and commissioned psychologists who saw real potential in heartfelt, cliched, mediocre novels about the mother who left and the husband who was gay and yet took a second wife. Prudence Antipode, gazing lifeless one December morning, a vein in her temporal lobe breaking ranks, blood drowning her mind to the morning news, playing automatically from a radio alarm clock, followed by a track by David Bowie. At last, mercifully free of the pleasures of the mind and the body and the obligations of the casual conversation of the insightful, witty type. Filled with references to her erudition and her need for love, adrift beyond Einstein's imaginary ether, lingering in the verses she published, remembered in the conversations where she was mentioned. Ah, that Prudence Antipode, so sad, such a darned clever person.
Don't drink it.
Thank God for that. Alexander Wormgrind saves the earth. Alexander Wormgrind, a gnarly little man, mind filled with the appropriate tomes, art, literature, and a suitable pragmatism, sitting at his desk, writing this. Midnight in a hot July. House silent with only the trace evidence of a sleeping family in nearby rooms. Family dog curled up on the couch, not a sound. And there at his desk he muses on the suffering of the world, the great shipwreck of the earth, the great planet heaving and cracking its hull against war and famine and death and economic decline. And there by his desk a horsefly waits, sitting, waiting. Just like that. In a moment, the horsefly will seek to make contact. It will seek to sting him. It will seek to infect Alexander Wormgrind with a disease that will kill him and wipe out all life on Earth. The virus, this most effective serial killer, was a horrible, accidental mutation, but Alexander Wormgrind sees the fly and he kills it. As Wormgrind's hand comes down on the fly, he suddenly felt the following words drift into his mind as though hearing a transmission drift radio waved from another realm. Why is it that every planet I visit is dead? Mr. Hyde gets real. Dear Jekyll, I'm not the man you might imagine. I'm not the doctor, the medicine, or the disease. My fashionable suppressions, my secret life, the way I hide inside these things I write, my world within, it's really cool. My world within, it kills the real. So deep in the velvet crush of self-deceit, I've been pleasant, sensitive, dubiously sweet about our rational, insane, modern life, your growing career in fashionable hate, your dark world of culture and financial gain. Jekyll, the adult child, my childlike parents love, brilliant and successful and deliriously happy, The umbilical cord is your ball and chain. In truth, I know not why I am so vain. You see, I'm talking about myself again. Vaster than God. I saw the small, still thing in the field when I was 15 and on holidays. Its eyes were fixed in an empty gaze upon earth and sky. Its body arched and its paws were curled up like inverted question marks, and its fleecy curls were covered with flies and shit and water, and it was cold. And I stood there and I looked and I touched it first with a stick because I was afraid. I was dumbstruck. And I thought, though the day was hot, and the hot wind gathered in the nearby beach and sycamore, and though there was so much light, I squinted and my hair was bleached, and I shivered when I picked up the lamb. I held it, embarrassed at my tears, and its head lolled back, and it looked blindly down, and a tiny pink tongue peeked between its baby teeth, and I said, this is no small thing. And I buried it. Treasure Island. Down in the farmyard, it's 6 in the morning. Above circles a murder of crows. The farmhands are feeding, the animals are eating. Another last meal before doom. In the kitchen, my grandfather is cutting the brown bread. He cuts me a slice with some cheese. Joe, what's that you're reading? I smile, nothing, Granddad. He pours me a cup of sweet tea. I walk down past the haggard into the copses. Today is my 13th birthday. As the crows go silent, I open Treasure Island. I know I'm feeling lucky today. Einstein meets camel. Einstein meets camel in a quantum state. How's that going to break? Einstein meets camel. Beyond the weaving of all reason, this is the end. Beyond the fusion of all logic, this is the end. Between the breathing and the breathing comes the pause. Between the heartbeat and the heartbeat, there's nothing. Okay, this is the Butthole Surfers, one of my favorite bands. Great name. And a song called Pepper. So there's a few verses on the song called Pepper. Marky got with Sharon and Sharon got Charisse. She was sharing Sharon's outlook on the topic of disease. Mikey had a facial scar and Bobby was a racist. They were all in love with dying. They were doing it in Texas. Tommy played piano like a kid out in the rain. Then he lost his leg in Dallas. He was dancing with a train. They were all in love with dying. They were drinking from a fountain. It was pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain. I don't mind the sun sometimes, the images it shows. I can taste you on my lips and smell you in my clothes. Cinnamon and sugary and softly spoken lies. You never know just how you look through other people's eyes. Some will die in hot pursuit and fiery auto crashes. Some will die in hot pursuit and drift sifting through my ashes. Some will fall in love with life and drink it from a fountain. It's pouring like an avalanche, coming down the mountain. Last two. Joe the astronaut touches down. I who drown have this deal with God. As my last heartbeats beat out these senses, loosed from the moorings of the flesh, come alive Frankenstein and broker from the stopwatch void a second, and look up as simmering sapphires linger in the surface tension, such heartbreaking refractions, fiery coloured lights raving in the distance, as my limbs at last desist with their endless struggling, as my mind and other instruments of torture cut beneath in this jetsam of lessness dissolves, as that ghost I call myself is exhaled in a failing breath, a last kiss with a cool, still embrace of the ocean floor. This is my home, my life, my history, my end to striving, my haven, where weird plants linger in the undercurrents, lost by wreckage, where sea creatures sleep and live. Last one. An answer in the darkness came. And time, the lessening clock, the child, the secretary of night, my alien self-composer of nightmares, with matchless eyes, with cartographer's eyes, upwards draws a ghost finger of moons, and the house shakes with the terrible astronauts. Those sleepers wake with their dreams of deathless seas of Europa and of Ganymede, dead astronauts singing in the void, ships passing, worlds turning in the night, waiting, waiting, forgotten worlds, and the alien terrain of ceiling in the glow, the surreal whisper, and the rain beats savage against the panes, and the mind upheaves, the dawn in the dark, lying supine, the clear night. I thought of the moon, how it slept so little amidst the stars, the night, the endless turn, forgotten, the deathless, deathless kiss of time.